UMass went down to Storrs for one massive ranked road game, and they came out with a crazy two-goal comeback win. We're talking all about it, and we got Nathan Strauss with us, so let's go.
Trevino shoots, he scores! McCarr, one timer, score! Hollinger fires, he shoots, he scores! UMass does it again! Watch out! Watch out!
High Character.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 144 of High Character. UMass had a quick weekend, just one game, but they got the job done against number 11 UConn, a huge road win, and this is going to be a fun one to talk about it, so we can't wait to get into the action. My name is Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by my good pal, Evan. Evan, I'm pretty sure I know how you're feeling right now, so I'll go to our other co-host today, Nathan Strauss, one of the voices of the Minutemen. He's joining us for this recap. Nathan, how's it going?
It's going great. It's nice to see that you have your hat back. Evan, did you get your hat back on Friday?
I do have it. It's actually in my car currently. I always like to keep it in there just in case, you know, I don't want to forget it. There was one time, I think it might have been last year, where I left it at home. I was so excited to go. I ended up leaving my house at like 2 o'clock on a Friday, ready to go. I started leaving my car from lot 25 to walk to Mullins. And I'm like, wait, where the hell's my hat? And I was like, oh no. So now, as a personal rule, I keep it in my car, so it's always ready to go. But I do have it. We did end up getting it back.
Yeah, I guess we'll start on that topic because that was kind of a fun part of the weekend. Obviously, Jack Musa hat trick. Also, Jack Musa player of the week in Hockey East this week. So huge props to him right there. Evan and I tossed our hats like we promised. I forget which episode it was, but we said we'd toss them. Yep. We did. Evan got a nice shout out from Nathan on the broadcast, the radio broadcast, which was pretty sweet. You looked like you were about to say something, so I paused.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sorry for not throwing you one too, but by the time you had your hat off and on the ice, like I had to get back to like describing where the players were going back to the bench. So three total hats on the ice and you two accounted for both of them, but credit Evan for like just letting it rip right away. He was on his game without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I totally get it. Evan just threw his right away. I actually waited for Musa to turn the corner to make sure he saw it. I want a player to know that he's getting love on the road there. But yeah, we did get our hats back. We were sitting right next to the penalty box. Just asked kindly for them. Somebody in there said, "Hey, which ones are yours?" And we grabbed them, much to the dismay of UConn fans sitting around us. I kind of get it.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's a little crazy. But.
Dude, it was crazy. Like, I remember specifically there was, like, they were probably hammered, let's be honest. They were rowdy. They were drunk. Like, they were having a great time. There was probably, like, five or six students sitting, I think, behind us. And they decided to roast me originally when I got my hat back. They were begging the person inside the penalty box not to give us our hats back. And then they specifically pointed out, I don't know if anybody, Cam, you might want to post some clips of this later, but if anybody doesn't know, I am bald, right? I am out here. I shave my head every like 2 days, basically.
Contrary to the High Character logo, you are bald.
Correct. Well, that was made a little while ago. That was when I was in my thinning era, which was not a great time. So I decided to take control of my hair, or lack thereof, and I just took care of the whole thing in one fell swoop. They decided to fully just let everybody know, hey, this guy's bald. And I sit there, I took my hat back off, smiling, because we were up, I think it was that the 5-4 goal at that point? I forget. Or maybe that was the 4-3. Yeah, so it was 4-3. And I'm sitting there, took my hat off, showed the bald head. You could see the reflection of the scoreboard in my forehead and my bald head, basically showing them that we were in the lead. So couldn't have been happier to take a lump for that one. That was definitely a good one.
Yeah, it was a cool moment, and we'll talk about everything that transpired before and after that. This was an awesome game. And a huge game implication-wise for UMass too. So we'll get into all those details. One of the housekeeping things before we get into it, big addition on the line sheets, Cam O'Neill back for this game after being out for quite a bit. Obviously, UMass is pretty depleted at this point. So just to get a body back, a capable scoring forward as well, is huge right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on the fourth line, I feel, and he's honestly been kind of moving up and down the lineup, I think, you know, kind of throughout the whole season. So, I mean, just to have another healthy winger, I feel like is always great to have. I mean, he could have easily been an influx of scoring to our fourth line, which honestly, I think our fourth line's been pretty solid, even with his absence. And that just kind of shows the depth of our team right now. I think that's been really good. Nathan, you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I think getting him back is big because, you know, first of all, it enables the flexibility to sort of move guys around. So he started off on the fourth line last game, but then he ended up taking shifts on the third line. And, you know, Nick Van Tassel was moved around a little bit. Cameron was moved around a little bit. It kind of just allows for a more balanced bottom six, I think, because he was playing some pretty good hockey before his first injury, and then he had just come back before getting injured a second time. So I know the numbers aren't great, just the two goals this year, but if he can get firing, it's another guy to add to the lineup. And, you know, especially if Idar comes back in the next week or two, which, you know, TBD, then you're looking at, you know, really not just three lines, but maybe four lines if you have to bump down, say, you know, Lautenbach or Cameron to the fourth line. And, yeah, you know, really respect how Bo Cosman and Dewar and Joey Musa have played the last month or so, but it does just give more options and more depth, especially as the back-to-backs increase over the next, you know, really just the next month.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just going to ask if you have any updates on when Suniev might come back. I know it's pretty, they keep injuries pretty secretive in college hockey, but if there's any time we can expect it. You said maybe next week, maybe the BC series.
I don't know. I mean, I saw him. He's out of his boot for sure. Because I saw him and I said hi to him at UConn, just walking around the concourse. But I don't have anything else, any other things to add other than that. You know, frankly, like, you just want him to be healthy. So you'd rather not play him if he's 80% against BC, and you'd rather play him at 100% against UNH, I think. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. My hope is that he gets healthy and is able to come back before the end of the season. I don't have any other details, mm-hmm. but getting Cam O'Neill back, because we had heard that he might have been out for the season from Carve, and getting him back is huge.
And yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, I think the biggest thing about just kind of the whole line chart thing is just seeing how other players have stepped up, especially with Suniev's absence. Like, I think we're going to get into it in this episode because he ended up getting a goal in this one, but Kenny Connors has been absolutely electric. Like, he's managed to kind of, like, really pick up his scoring touch, which is honestly greatly needed when you lose probably our most capable goal scorer in Suniev. So just kind of seeing, you know, other players step up, and then obviously, you know, again, getting Cam O'Neill back is going to be really important, I think, just for the lineups to kind of be a bit more consistent, hopefully, going forward, and we're not, you know, having to shift guys around all the time like we have been recently.
Yeah, and Jack Musa, obviously, which we'll talk about what he did and what he's been doing recently. But it was UConn in this game that kind of got off on the right foot offensively. Not a great start for UMass. I feel like we've said that all year about theirs, and not even the first period, like just the first 10 minutes being really down. And it showed right away in this game. Less than 4 minutes in, they were penned in their zone for quite a while. UConn getting really high quality chances, Travel having to make some saves. And they finally did break through. Really greasy goal, just a lot of action in front of the net. UMass unable to clear the front. And it was Joey Maldoni, one of the best players on UConn, finishing it off. So not a great start. And eye test, scoreboard, all of it did not look great.
It gives me really similar vibes. I don't know if anybody's played like the new NHL games, but like they always keep talking about like the pressure system and stuff like that. And like the EA NHL games where like, if you keep up like the ozone time, basically like your goalie just starts playing way worse. Like everybody just gets like really fatigued. I feel like that's kind of what happened here. Like much to Hrabel's credit, I think the main thing that happened here is I think it might've been Lochmelis that was screening him. And I feel like nobody could really get a good wrangle on the puck in front of the net. And he was just kind of a little bit out of position. He didn't really know to, you know, push over to the right-hand side and try to cover that side. But yeah, I mean, really unfortunate. I think the biggest thing for the first 10 minutes was just UConn was playing with a metric shit ton of speed. Like every single pass was connecting. They were just playing with a very big energy and just like a lot of pace to their game. And UMass frankly wasn't matching that. And I think that was kind of where those, you know, really poor 10 minutes kind of came from.
It was the same thing that happened against Maine too. And, you know, not a dissimilar situation. You know, you get trapped out there by teams that can cycle. And I do think like the reason that the pressure system, I kind of am okay with it in the new NHL. I didn't like it last year. It sort of garnered me a little bit is because like that actually does happen. Like guys will lose their man and be slower to react. And just, it's the same way that Maine's first goal came about, which was you got trapped basically in your own zone for a minute and a half. And then all of a sudden, the puck goes from below the icing line to the slot and you score. The second goal was dissimilar. That was just a great play, but it was a quick zone entry and then a sort of behind the back or backhand pass to a quick one-timer. Like that was a sexy goal. I'm not going to lie. The second for Muldowney.
Yeah, UConn's second came quick just 3 minutes later. Again, like you said, they were cycling the puck, backhanded pass. Really pretty goal. Nothing Gravel could do here, just over his shoulder. on the near side. And it's funny you brought up the pressure system because I really like it too. And it seemed like that was what was going on with Thrabble too. Like the more the puck's in the zone, like the less the goalie kind of knows where he is, the more sprawling out he has to be going from side to side. So, and yeah, I think it was just an ineffective defense being able to clear the puck out in front. Lot of zone time, a lot of pressure. And just like that, 2-goal deficit, like tough to come back from.
And I swear that this is the last time I'm going to bring up the EA NHL games, but it's actually really funny that I did bring it up because literally before the UConn game, I drove out to Hartford. I have a friend of mine who lives near Hartford. I bought his PS5 off of him that day for $300 with NHL 25. And I am literally installing the game as we speak on my PlayStation that's in front of my computer. So very funny. I will be able to test out that new pressure system. We'll see if it's any good. I won't have anything to compare it to from last year, but I'll definitely see if I can get some similar goals of mine. Hopefully, who knows, maybe I'll recreate UMass in the game, and then I can see if we can actually recreate something like that. I think that'll be really fun.
But I really think like there's the ability to play with some college baseball teams in this upcoming MLB The Show as mm-hmm. part of your road to the show. Obviously, you know, there's the college football video game right now. Because they already have the CHL, and the World Juniors teams, I really think it would be so easy to add college hockey to the game, just given the fact that, like, with the new CHL rule and the junior teams, like, it really wouldn't take a ton of work to get them in there. And then you could integrate that into your franchise mode or be a GM mode where with your drafted prospects. Like, I would love that because I would love to just absolutely dangle on some, like, 10-year-old with, like, Idar Suniev. Like, I would just absolutely destroy some kids. You know what I'm saying? So I think
I would genuinely kill for that. Like, I'm a huge, like, franchise mode guy. And, like, I wish I could tell, like, when it was draft day, I know that I'm taking a player, like, from Minnesota, or I'm taking somebody from UMass, or I'm taking somebody from, like, St. Thomas. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it's cool, and it's, like, much more, like, immersion. But obviously, like you said, if I could just rip one near post with like Cole O'Hara or something like that, like, and just like, you know, wheel snipe and Selly in game like that, that would be the most insane thing I think ever. I would kill for that.
Well, 2 years ago, I remember UFCO was in the game for a World Juniors team. So it's there, like opportunities there. That would be pretty sick.
100%.
And back to this game, 2-0 pretty quickly into the first period. UMass is able to stable out a little bit. They get a 5-on-3 power play for well over a minute, and UConn just stuffs them. They had so many block shots in that one penalty kill. That was really demoralizing on top of that 2-0 deficit. And I wanted to ask you, Nathan, how do you think the last couple of weeks, the power play hasn't been what it was for the start of the season. I don't know if that's because Suniev's out. I don't know if that's a mixture of different things, but I guess they haven't been converting at the same rate as they have for the better part of this year.
Yeah, I mean, the power play, so they switched back to that 5-forward, or they switched out of that 5-forward look with Suniev out, and they have Del Elche quarterbacking that top unit, and it did get them a goal against Merrimack Mercury in front. Mm-hmm. And frankly, like, they had good looks on a lot of their power plays as well. And the number going into the game, they were, I think, 1 for their last 9, but it's not totally real because up in Maine, they took 2 penalties while on the power play. No. So it's the numbers aren't, I think, reflective of the chances they're creating. And honestly, like, yeah, the 5-on-3, they didn't get a goal, but it wasn't for like lack of opportunities. Like, Muzlik, we hit the post and Muzlik made a good save. Again, like, I'm not too concerned with the power play. They're still top 5 in the country or top 6 in the country. Like, in general, I think they're in a better place than the numbers would say. And even still, the numbers have you at a top 10 in the country. Mm-hmm. But it did feel at that point like, okay, you go into the second, like, you come out of that first period, you had momentum with that 5-on-3 and you couldn't bury it. Yeah. But then you start off period number 2 still on the power play. And then all of a sudden it's like a totally different team. So not the first time in the last couple of weeks we've seen a slow first 10, 12 minutes, but then the second period comes around and it's totally different.
Yeah, exactly. First period ended 2-0, but they did carry over a power play. And very quickly into the second, they're able to get on the board. I believe it was a shot from Yenshko that was a rebound out in front. Got tapped in by Jack Musa for his first of the day, and big to just come out of the locker room with that boost there, especially after how demoralizing the first period was.
Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely huge, right? I mean, I think, again, we've seen that a lot. Like, I don't know what the hell Carvey does in the locker room. I don't know if it's, like, objective X's and O's hockey or if it's, like, just motivation, screaming, like, or just, like, you know, lighting a fire under them. But, like, whatever he's been doing has been working. You know what I mean? And that's – you can tell, I think, there's just, like, kind of an overall vibe, right? Like, I remember – Kim, I think it was after this game. I don't want to go too far off topic here, but I think it was after the game we were talking to Matt Chipman, right? And he was mentioning that he's a guy, so huge UMass hockey fan, wonderful listener of the pod. Shout out to him. We were talking to him after the game, and he was saying that he could kind of tell before a game how the team was going to start off the game based off of like how loose they looked in warmups, which I think is a super like weird thing. You know what I mean? Like he has this theory that if the team looks like really just like, you know, like lackadaisical and like not very locked in during warmups, we tend to play the first 10 minutes very poorly. And he noticed that like half the team was locked in for the UConn game and the other half was not. And I feel like you could kind of actually tell that out in the play a little bit. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the weird 4 o'clock start time on a Friday. I mean, I know it's, you know, as a player, you still are supposed to get up for every single game, but yeah. you just played that weird 4 o'clock game up in Maine, but it was a different kind of vibe, right? Like you travel day of and you're down there and it's an early start. I kind of understand why there might be a slow start. Remember, like at the first half of this year, UMass was one of the best starting teams in the country as far as scoring the first goal. Like I think through 22 games, UMass had scored first in 18 of 22, and it's totally changed since then. But it's not a bad thing when you show the ability to respond like they did. And of course, like scoring first, it's not the most indicative stat of all time. Yeah. Plenty of times, like the Merrimack game, you give up a goal first and then you just dismantle them for the remainder of the game. UConn, the second and third period, like I know the shot totals were a little wonky, but like the second period and third period, it was all UMass, like could have scored seven. So.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's anything to it, but at Toscano, if you haven't seen it before, like the side where four of the first five goals in this game were scored on were where the goalie's facing that big window and it was light outside. It's normally dark out when they're playing games. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but just interesting knowing that. UConn is able to respond pretty quickly. Just a few minutes later, just an absolute beauty of a shot from Ethan Whitcomb, top left corner right over Hrabel's shoulder. I don't know, Evan, if you think Hrabel really had a chance at this one. He was kind of screened by his own player and it was a great shot, but kind of maybe one, I think his only goal given up that I maybe think he would want back in this game.
I disagree. I don't know. I think the screen from who was that? I'm trying to look back at the replay. Is it Alex maybe? Yeah, it looks like.
I mean, it was a power play goal from the guy in the slot. Yeah. I don't really, I think it's hard to blame. I think
no, 100%. Yeah, that's where I'm at. I mean, and it was a filthy shot. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't much net to shoot at near post there. And he managed to put, I think it was posted in like, that's a filthy shot. You know what I mean? Like he was ready for that. And again, obviously on the power play, I think it's almost impossible to blame a goalie on that. Just in general, like you're giving up a power play goal. It is what it is. You know what I mean? I think you got to blame the guy in the box more, unless it's like an egregiously bad call by the refs. And I think we've said this before in the pod. I think refs have been really, really solid this year. Like, I feel like there hasn't been too many times where we're sitting there like, oh, that's extremely inconsistent. Like, what are these guys doing? Like stripes is bad. Like they've been really, really, at least for the past 8 years that I've been paying attention to UMass hockey, you know, in general, this has probably been one of the best hockey's ref situations that we've had. So very happy to see that. Nathan, I don't know if you have anything to add there.
Yeah, the refs have been by and large really, really good this year. And Carves talked about it and observers around the league have talked about it. Cause like you watch games and other conferences, you know, especially the one out west that starts with an N and it's, you know, it's totally different. Like the standard of officiating is pretty high here. And there were a couple calls that like there were two icings that were whistled against UMass that shouldn't have been, and one of which they actually huddled up and brought it to the neutral zone. Yeah. Aside from that, and on the last UConn goal of the game, Cole O'Hara got like murdered in the face before they scored. Aside from that, it was a pretty again, the officiating has by and large been really, really good this year. And so I thought this was one of the less good officiating games, and it was still really well officiated. So
exactly.
You know, even the Cole O'Hara penalty that led to that third goal, it was a high stick that was called, but it was kind of just a penalty for Cole being aggressive more than anything else. The penalty on Del Elche in the third was a blatant cross check and could have been a second cross check. Like in general, pretty well done.
UConn fans would probably disagree with you guys at the end of that first period. One of the UConn players flopped and tried to get a call, but they didn't call it, which was a good
that,
no
that
call.
One was insane.
That was on Dons and caught it right away. It was Jake Richard, and he just went down, and they didn't call it. So that's
right. Yeah, it was a good no call there.
Yeah.
So that goal made it 3-1 UConn. UMass responded right away, which the last few games they've really been responding well after giving up goals. Just beat the defense pretty clean. It was a very nice cross-crease pass from Cole O'Hara. Jack Musa just a little bit faster, finding his way to the goal there. He's able to tap it home for his second goal of the game. And again, this Mercury-O'Hara-Musa line has just been absolutely electric. Not even just the last few games, just all year.
100%. I mean, I feel like I've said this about Musa before, because I feel like he has a couple of these types of just like backdoor tap in goals this season. It's one of the easier goals he's going to get. Like, I think the majority of the work that goes into that goal is more mental than anything. Like, he finds the little gap kind of created by the UConn defender and just slips backside. You know what I mean? Like, he's a smaller guy. I think we can say that, and he's not going to take offense to that. He's not the biggest guy on the team, but he's quick as hell. You know what I mean? He has great quickness, great, you know, just overall agility. He can find those small gaps. That's what he does on the power play. I mention all the time. He's like the bumper or whatever they call it. Like, he can just find those little soft spots in the defense, and he can put pucks on net, and he had 85% of the net to shoot at on this one. You know, he's not going to miss from there. So right on the doorstep, an unreal pass from Cole. Like, being able to thread that through, he's just taken another step in his development where he's just constantly adding more consistency, more just overall skills to his toolbox, and he's letting them all unleash themselves, you know, especially in this UConn game. He looked really, really good.
Yeah, I use the phrase, what's good for the goose, as in what's good for the goose is good for the gander, which basically means a rising tide carries all ships. I can keep going with the cliches, but
I love them.
Four guys on UMass with a 6-game point streak right now, and three of them are on that line. So Cole in his last 6 games has 6 goals, 6 assists. Merckx in his last 6 games has 5 goals, 5 assists, and Moose has 5 goals, 6 assists. So it's like basically perfectly balanced, as all things should be, because those three have combined for 33 points in 6 games. The other guy, by the way, is Kenny Connors, who has a 6 game, has 6 goals in his last 6 games with 2 assists as well. So Cole is, he had an 8-game point streak to start the year. He's approaching that too. Yeah, I mean, that line has really been working. But clearly, in the second period, UMass realized that the same thing that UConn was trying to do to them in the first, which is stretch them, like when you leave the zone, stretch them and just like, you know, try to quickly exit the zone via passing versus carrying out. It led to all these great chances. And that the second UMass goal was a 3-on-2 that became a 2-on-1 because Mercury did a good job to win the puck in the neutral zone, carried it in. And then it became a little 2-on-1. So that was textbook. And UMass had a couple other opportunities in that period. Musa in the first had also hit the outside of the post on Muslik. So Musa was really involved. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, he was great.
While we still have O'Hara on the mind, Evan and I are pretty much on the same page. But how do you feel about his chances of coming back for a senior year next year?
Ooh, so it's a really, really interesting question. And it's kind of like, I would understand whatever decision he and his advisor want to make. What I will say, though, is that I think that if he comes back, he's going to wear a letter.
Yep.
He's going to come back as one of the leading returning point scorers in the country. He's going to come back with a legitimate shot at a Hobie Baker. Mm-hmm. And he has a chance along with that, you know, the members of that class. So him and Kenny primarily, but also Owen, like those guys they have a chance to be the class that, you know, Bobby's senior class was really, which is they have Hockey East is going to be very different next year because I know there are some perennial powerhouses there, but BC without Ryan Leonard, I know they're still going to have Hagans and Letourneau is going to get better and all of that, but like, that's going to be different. BU is not going to have, they might lose both Hudsons this year. Maine is a really interesting case study because the vast, vast, vast majority of their players are seniors. Yep. So you're looking at like a radically different, I mean, Northeastern, a lot of seniors on that team as well. You're looking at like a radically different landscape, I think, where it's UMass, if they're able to retain both Cole and Idar, Like, I think you're looking at like a preseason first or a preseason like second or third in the polls.
Easily.
You know, especially if Michael stays. Like, I don't know. So if I were him, like, there are times in his game this year where I see what he does and it looks similar to what Bobby did and it looks similar to what Kale did, not in terms of the dominance, not in terms of the play style, but he will have shifts where he just takes over and is the best player on the ice. He had one of those against Merrimack where he set up the Mercury tip in front. He has had a couple of them against over the course of this year. I really think, like, especially with how, you know, with the contracts that the wingers have in Nashville right now, there's no harm in taking that extra year. Like, Nashville didn't sign Gunnar Wolf-Fontaine last year, and he had similar numbers to Cole, a little worse, and now he's doing his grad year at Northeastern, or rather at Ohio State, excuse me. So I think I would love for him to come back. I think he'd be a really good guy to wear a letter. You know, I don't know if that would be a C or an A, but, you know, you think about the guys who might wear letters next year, and the guys, the names that jumped out at me are Owen Murray and Cole and Lucas Olvestad, who from what I've heard is like one of the most vocal guys in the locker room. And maybe even Kenny Connors too, with how he's been playing. Like, I think you're looking at, like, I know you guys have been big on the, like, next year's the year type of thing. Yep. And frankly, like, I'm kind of agreeing with you, because you think about the guys who UMass has on the back end this year, it's a light unit, you know, both in terms of experience and in terms of actual bodies. You add some guys next year, you bring in, you know, a guy like Justin Kerr, you bring in, you know, probably Jack Galanick as well, or Jack Galanick as well, who's been having a fantastic season this year. Maybe you bring in, you know, one of your top D that you have out there in Nyes. But you know, he's still on the younger side of things. Like, that you're basically losing, and it's a big loss. You're losing Lucas Mercury, you're losing Joey Musa, you're losing Ryan Lautenbach, and you're losing Lyndon Alger. But as far as like what you can sustain in today's day and age, and maybe you lose someone else to the portal, who knows? Or maybe someone else signs, who knows? But like, you're looking at a team that's going to be like remarkably intact, especially the forward group. And Merckx is a big loss, both in the room and also on the ice. But you're looking at like arguably maybe the most talented forward core in program history. Yeah. Especially if, like, who knows? Do you bring in Vasilev Nastrasil next year? Like, I'm not a recruiting person. I also don't know anything more than what we know. But next year is going to be really exciting, especially if you go into it with the idea that, okay, Idar and Cole are leaving after that year. Krabbel probably leaving after that year. You know, like, that is the kind of peak that we saw in 2021 and then also 2022.
Yeah, and you mentioned where Evan and I stand on that. I can picture us having a nice full summer episode going deep into our expectations for next year. We're pretty excited about how next year is going to go.
And also, like this year's team is also capable of like going on a run, you know, like right now they are one of the 15 best teams in the country. And to do that in a year where you have basically seven defensemen on your roster and three of them are freshmen. And like, that's like pretty impressive, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm not even pretty impressive. That's insane. You know what I mean?
Like, second largest freshman class in the country. You're one of the youngest teams out there, and you've got the smallest senior class in the nation as well. Like, I don't know. That portends well for the Minutemen.
I think I said it on the pod. I don't know if it was last week or the week before, but like, I've been hearing from people, you know, just like online and in person, like they think that this is like a bit of a step back from the previous year. And it's like, it's not like we're literally right where we're at. And it's like, when you look at like the overall roster composition, like we're still like, we're super young on the back end. Like you were saying, like, if this is our like retool year and we're still on the cusp of making the national champion or like the national tournament, this is a damn good retool. You know what I mean? If we're going to be able to retain everybody, and then we have our like, it's go time next year. Like, next year is going to be ridiculous. You know what I mean?
I'm not calling out anyone specific here. But you know, we're in the same group chat and we have these same discussions after any time UMass loses. And like, again, this is a down year for UMass where they are going to be a bubble team for the NCAA tournament. They're top 10 in the country in almost every relevant statistic. You've got a legitimate Hobie Baker candidate. You've got a Richter Longlist guy. You are, and still, you look at the UMass has made more tournaments, more national tournaments than any other team in Hockey East over the last 5 years. And the only team that's made more than them in the country is Denver since then. Like, if you go into every season thinking tournament or bust, then there's a whole lot of BU fans and BC fans and North Dakota fans and who are not going to be happy. Like, yeah. It's just not realistic. Like, sometimes you're going to have bad years. And if this is like a down year, like 2022 was a down year and they still, you know, bounced back from that with a great following season. That's the only year they've missed the tournament since before, you know, since Cale's sophomore year, like before Cale's sophomore year. Like, I don't know. I think people sometimes maybe get almost too accustomed to where we're at are a little unwilling to recognize the fact that like the situation that we're in, I would say like all but two teams in Hockey East, their fans would kill for, you know?
Seriously. So, it's all about perspective.
Yeah. Like, again, and it's not a call out anyone in particular because you can be disappointed when things don't go your way, but like I've mellowed out over the years. Like, I think it's pretty easy to recognize like where we're at, if that makes sense.
100%.
I am loving this conversation, but how about we get back to our So you, one of the guys you mentioned, Donzel Schmelis, as being a guy to step up next year too. He's the one that ties this game up right in the beginning of the third. Pretty bad turnover for UConn. UMass takes advantage of it. Schmelis ends up with the puck at the blue line, skates around to the left faceoff circle. Beautiful wrist shot. Something that we haven't seen a ton from him, I guess, over the last 2 years, but like something that we certainly know is in his bag.
And I mean, dude, like, Donz has been not like a perplexing player, but he hasn't necessarily been like the flashiest guy. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like sometimes people get this idea around like draft capital and what that means as like what type of player you're supposed to be, right? Like, I feel like if anybody like, you know, kind of paid attention to what Donz is supposed to bring to the table from the outset, He's not the flashiest, sexiest player. You know what I mean? He has really good hockey IQ. He has really good back checking and defensive skills. He's not going to be this like nasty, like offensive, like take a game over type of force, but he's going to be probably one of the best complementary pieces to a line that you could ever ask for. Like great in the faceoff dot. Like, he is the textbook, like unsung hero centerman. And I feel like this is the type of play that kind of shows that. Like, it's not a crazy ripper, you know what I mean? But like, he's in the right position. He doesn't immediately drive straight to the net. Like, he opens up his body. He gets ready to kind of receive a pass and make a play. Like, he could have passed that across goal if he wanted to. I couldn't tell who was, you know, streaking back post. But like, he had so many options, but he ended up tucking it near post. Like, that's a great play. And, you know, I'm happy that Schmelis has picked it up offensively in the second half of the season. Cause I think like we were having a lot of conversations like, oh, he had what, like 14 or 15 assists, I think, before he got his first goal of the season, like very similar to Kenny. Like, you know, we've had multiple guys on this team that have had that, you know, the kind of like the dam kind of needed to break goals wise in order for them to start flooding in. And that's what happened with Schmelis. And that's definitely what's happened with Kenny Connors as well. So very, very happy for, you know, the both of them, but definitely for Donz on this play.
Yeah, I mean, you need more of that. Like, the last thing, like, you need him to score goals. And he wasn't for a large portion of this year. Same with Kenny. And there was a time, and especially in November, where like UMass was struggling for goals a bit. You think about the Providence game, the three UVM games, like those would be huge. So getting, if he's firing and Kenny's firing, and then you add Adarsuniev back again, you're looking at a top five offense in the country again.
Yeah, and he really got the boys buzzing here at the start of the third. They keep carrying the momentum. Great period all around for UMass. Few minutes later, Olvestad has the puck up near the corner of the blue line. He shoots it on, gets redirected by Jack Musev. Absolutely beautiful tip to finish off his hat trick. Nathan, I've heard your call for a great call. I've heard it like 50 times putting some edits together the other day. And I guess we should just talk a little bit more about Jack Musev, because beautiful tip here. I feel like we see that a lot the last 2 years. And all three of his goals in this game, different types of goals. So kind of shows off like how multifaceted he is as a player.
Yeah, I think Jack, you know, he is really good around the net, which is not surprising, but he's not the biggest guy, like as you already mentioned. And he's got a good shot. He's got really good speed, too. And he draws a penalty later on in this game by basically chipping it off the wall to himself and just beating his defender with foot speed. And this was a really difficult goal. He tips it from like, I want to say like 8 feet or 10 feet out, moving away. It's a really deft goal. And he surpasses his freshman year point total, or goal total rather, with that one, his third of the game. And as soon as that goal went in and UMass took the lead, like I felt pretty confident once UMass tied it up. But as soon as that goal went in, I was like, you can't come back from that. You can't, you know, they when UConn answered the bell in the second period to make it 3-1, I was like a little nervous. And then it really kind of like faded away. And Musa did a really, really good job. You know, he also had a slower start as far as his point total. He didn't have a ton of assists early on in the year. And also last year he had 6 power play goals, and he's been more of a weapon at even strength this year. So he is another guy who is, you know, going to get another invite to dev camp this year. He's been really, really good as of late, and a big credit, I think, to, you know, to putting him on that line with Lucas and Cole. It's the perfect blend of the three of them.
And I think just to kind of touch upon, like, I think we've mentioned multiple times on this pod and in previous pods, like, we keep saying that he's not the biggest guy, but like, I might go as far to say is that he might play the biggest out of anybody on the team. Like, I think, Cam, you've kind of drawn conclusions. Like, he got that Bobby in him. You know what I mean? Like, there were points in this UConn game where he's battling out for a puck, like, near the boards or just, like, you know, going towards the boards. And he's up against a guy that's, like, 6'3". And he's putting the 6'3 guy on his ass. You know what I mean? Like, there's just a level of balance. And, like, I know there's always, like, you know, lower center of gravity. Like, I'll be honest, I'm a civil engineer. I kind of sucked at physics, I'll be honest with you. That's why I'm doing transportation and I'm not doing, like, structural design for bridges and stuff like that. Like, I'm not the greatest at physics, but, like, I know that having a lower center of gravity tends to help you out when it comes to these sorts of things. And that's been just like a massive hallmark to his game. Like, it's both speed, but also balance and strength as well. Like, he's a very just like well-rounded type of player, like great hand eye, great speed, great shot, great passing. Like, he's been such a great player in his time here. And again, it just goes to show, like, everybody complains like, oh, you know, when's the last time we got a first round guy? Dude, I don't care. You know what I mean? This guy's undrafted. You know what I mean? Like, we got him into the school as a 20-year-old, and he's been one of our most electric players at times. You know what I mean? Like, draft capital, no offense, doesn't really mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things if you get really good players that are going to develop during their times here.
Yeah, I've caught some flack for that Bobby T comparison, but watch out. He's only a sophomore still, and the skills he's showing has been pretty impressive. And who also has been impressive lately, we've talked about him so much in the last couple of weeks, Kenny Connors. Just a few minutes later, he finds himself with a lot of space on the right side, and he fires home a wrister, one that maybe a few weeks ago would have gone over the crossbar off to the side or something like that, but this one goes barring in. He's been pretty consistent with that over the last few weeks, honing that shot, and it's been really fun to watch, especially in Sunio's absence.
Yeah, and I will say,
it's a sexy goal, right? It's a sexy goal. It's such a good goal.
Yeah, well, that's the thing I was going to say is, like, I think so. Check out the High Character socials for that one. I think we were the only ones that ended up posting that specific goal. And honestly, I think it was probably the best one, like, in terms of just, like, overall beauty. Like, far post snipe, you know, post and in, like, come on. I feel like that's, like, a beautiful just, like, hockey goal. Like, he shot it, like, from the faceoff dot. Kind of a weird angle, if we're being honest. You know what I mean? Like,
He's a lefty on the right wing. Yeah. So he's lefty coming on the right wing, which is a goal scoring area because you can pick both sides. So he did a great job there. And he went high blocker side on Muslik, who did not have a great game, even though he made some saves. Like, he made some big saves in the first, and then I don't think he should have had that necessarily, but I don't think he was outstanding.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that right there, in my opinion, I think that's almost an unstoppable shot. Like, that's like full head of steam, Kenny Connors, who again has been picking up his goal scoring pace over these past couple of weeks. Like, The biggest thing that I think has been, not just with just him, but the whole team, has been confidence. Like, you saw it in the UConn game. Like, as we started to chip our way back into it, like, in the second period and then going into the third, like, the dominance was just, like, it was almost, like logarithmic. It wasn't actually just, like, linear. You know what I mean? Like, again, another math reference here, but, like, that's just how the team was looking. Like, once we got to that third period and we really started putting our foot on the gas, like, it was just go time. And we were just, you almost couldn't be denied at that point, it felt like.
If you like that logarithmic thing, by the way, I don't know if either of you play Balatro or Balatro.
I know of it. I haven't played it, but I know of it.
It's worth the $10. Like, it would be so up your alley. It would be perfect for you. Anyways.
No, I love that. And that's literally, like, it's just, I we got to start bringing like more references. Like, this is why I like having Strauss on here. It's just like, I feel like I can nerd out a little bit and I can throw in some video game stuff. I'm not saying I can't do that with Cam. Maybe I should start doing that with Cam more. Maybe this is the go ahead to start doing that. But I think there's been some really good discussions.
Well, yeah, Nathan brought up Shell and MLB The Show. If we start talking more of that, I'm all.
We can make a separate podcast for that type of stuff.
Have I ever told the story about the time that Carve asked me if I was playing Fortnite?
No. Oh,
I need this. Because we basically have wrapped up this game, I feel like, right? Yeah. Cam, can we say that? We win.
I'll do the brief, right? UConn gets a goal with the extra attacker after Cole O'Hara gets hit in the head in front of the goal. And it could have been maybe a 2-minute call for roughing, but it was not going to be worthy of a major. So it was a little nervy, but UMass won their draws and they took care of business and actually made a couple of really nice plays in the later stage of that third period too, to, you know, keep the lead at two. So anyways, 5-4, the final big dub, great team win. And very happy Carve, who won his 250th game. And we can get to that too, but I'll tell the Carve story first. So
yeah, let's get this.
My senior year, I was living at a new-ish like apartment complex in Amherst, and it was all built and furnished, but like they were still having to do work on it at times. And so there was construction going on, and I had these massive gaming headphones. They're now broken. I don't use them anymore, this particular one. But you put them over your ears, and they're pretty clearly like gaming headphones, you know, like they've got a mic on it and everything. Like, and, you know, I asked my press conference asked my question during this press conference, and he answers it and he goes, "Nathan, like, what's going on? Like, you playing Fortnite over there?" And I had to explain to him that I was not playing Fortnite. But at the same time, I was very, very amused at the idea of Greg Carville playing Fortnite. And I've later learned, you know, Drew Carville plays Fortnite, et cetera, et cetera. But it was just really funny. And that was my senior year. He really roasted me a lot. He gets me now and then, but it certainly peaked then in the sort of the same way he used to do it to Evan Marinofsky as well.
Our Evan knows best also. Like, you got to be on your best around Carve.
Yeah.
Take advantage of those little moments.
Yeah, no, I think Nathan's already fully aware, and I've definitely talked about this one on the pod. Should I briefly explain it again, Cam? Or
yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I think it was Lake Placid last year. We ended up, it was the game. I think, was it the Clarkson game? I think that sounds right.
It wasn't. It was the Cornell.
Okay. Yeah. So it was Cornell. It was the one that Scotty got Morrow got tossed in. And I remember we went down because we ended up getting media credentials for that specific tournament. And me and Cam both go down, and it was like, you know, media time, and that, you know, they had all the phones out and the microphones and stuff. And I ended up asking Carve, I was like, "Hey, like, you know, like, what are your thoughts on just like, you know, like the officiating? Like, because like clearly at the very end of the game, like things got out of hand. You know what I mean? Like, it got super chippy. Nobody was getting thrown in the box. Like, you could tell Morrow got wicked frustrated. I think he ended up like hitting the guy after the whistle. Things were going out of hand. And I was like, what are your thoughts on that just as a whole?" And he looks at me straight up and just goes, "Evan, you know I can't answer that." And then he just walked away. And I was like, "God damn it." Like, I felt like such an idiot. Like, because like, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, if I was thinking clearly, I'd been like, "Yeah, maybe let's not ask him about hockey's officiating." Or was even hockey at that point? I think it was hosted by
ECAC.
Yeah, so that makes sense. But just not a good look. I didn't even want to go there, down there after the second game, because I just didn't even want to embarrass myself even more. So kudos to all the journalists out there. They're definitely doing stuff that I wouldn't dare do at this point. But I don't know. Maybe I'll start throwing my hat back in the ring again, and maybe we'll start getting some more media credentials, and I'll redeem myself a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe once you're fully recovered from that, we'll step back in.
It'll take a little bit.
For the record, like, this still happens all the time. Like, the other day after the main game or one of the, maybe the Merrimack game, I asked him, I said, you know, it looked like Francesco Dell'Elce had a really good game defensively. Like, he was more involved there. What did you see from his game tonight? And he said, "Actually, like, I didn't think that, but I'm glad you did." And so, like, it happens all the time. And so, like, it's not something to be embarrassed about by any means.
I love that. And yeah. I do want to add one more question real quick on the Fortnite topic, because I am genuinely curious. And I'm going to take a quick poll for all three of us. Do we think that Carvey would be a build or a no build type of guy?
I mean, Carvey's a camper for sure.
Oh,
no. He's a builder, right? He built UMass, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
But you get, I don't know, older college coach behind the sticks. I don't know how well that's going to be.
Because I feel like,
skill aside, you might be right. but
there's going to be like different archetypes. I feel like if we're going to have this conversation of like college, like NCAA coaches and like how they would play Fortnite, like the guys that always go into the transfer portal, those are going to be like the Porta Fort guys that are just throwing it down. They can just build something out of nowhere. Right. But then if you got like, you got guys like Carvey, like old school, he's out there in the trenches. He's mining steel. He's cutting down buildings so he can make the steel late game. Like he's ready. And then you have other guys that are just, I'd rather just go no build entirely. And then those are the teams like, you know, like Robert Morris, that maybe we'll be throwing another stray at them like we always do.
But, can't say I've ever thought of this hypothetical, to be honest.
Yeah,
I like it.
I appreciate the fact that you did.
There we go. We take those. So maybe we'll just cut that one out entirely. I don't know. We'll see how much editing Cam wants to do. But
well, I have Carvey's post-game quote here. No Fortnite discussed in this one. But he was pretty happy. He said, outstanding 50 minutes for us. The last 50 minutes of the game, I thought were outstanding. We deserved that win. Real solid all the way around. We're getting scoring from a lot of players that weren't scoring earlier in the year. Jack Musa had a huge night for us. He's heating up. Our young defensemen are playing better. Just a lot of good things, and now they're all coming together. So Carvey's happy, and I think he brings up a good point, too, about the defensemen, especially in the second and third period. Me specifically, I noticed Del Elche having a great night. He seemed to have a lot of Scott Morrow in him, kind of splitting D-men and taking it coast to coast, which I love to see.
I still think the best comparison for Del Elche is actually Zach Jones, just because the hands and the skating are there and the vision is there too. But like Del Elche and Keenan both had really good games, and Carve talked about both of them. Like defensively, they had really noticeable games, minus the cross-checking penalty that Francesco took. Like they've both grown a lot, and this was probably their best game as a unit too. But I like the Zach Jones comparison just because there's a lot. He's more defensively responsible than Scott was, and Scott was also better offensively. Like Scott Morrow was like a prodigious offensive defenseman at the college level. Like no one aside from Lane Hudson really compared to him. So I like the Zach Jones comparison. Del Elche is also a little bit bigger. He's like, I want to say like maybe 3 inches taller than Jonesy, but yeah, they both were really good in general and had very, very good games.
And oh, 100%. Well, that's what I was going to actually lead into. I personally, in my opinion, I don't know if this is going to be a hot take, and this might be a bit of a spoiler for an award that I might be giving out a little bit later, but I think that Owen Murray was probably my favorite guy that was out there in the defensive unit in that game. I think, like, I remember distinctly, I think it might have been in the second period, but I think he had a huge block shot that just felt like, you know, that was almost like a goal scene one. I think Kennedy O'Connor did as well. I think, you know, I mean, the whole defensive unit, again, barring the first 10 minutes, I feel like was very, very solid throughout the rest of the game. And personally, I think Owen Murray was just like, you know, just really good on both ends. You know what I mean? Like just really good offensively, really good defensively, really solid in transition too. Like, I just think he kind of like embodied like the perfect role of like a two-way defenseman in every sense of the word. I was very happy with how he played.
Yeah, it was good stuff all around. Definitely agree with Carvey on the topic of defensemen there. And while we're still talking about Carvey, Nathan, you already mentioned his 250th collegiate win as a coach. You had a pretty cool post with an excerpt from him. Maybe you can speak a little bit on Carvey and his career. I think he's, what, 3 wins away from the UMass program record now? So
awesome. Yeah, he's 3 wins away from the UMass program record in year 9. But remember that, you know, year 1 was the losingest season in UMass history, 5 wins that year. I think that was that your freshman year, guys, or sophomore year?
That was our freshman year.
He went from the bottom up.
Yeah, so like when you consider the fact that really over the course of 8 years, he's going to have the most wins. Like I would be with 8 regular season games to go and at least 1 Hockey East playoff game to go, I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't get that this year. I know the BC is a tough series. Lowell, Maine, tough series. UNH, tough series. But like, it'll be cool for him. And at the beginning of the season, he was at 149. Which was pretty close to, it was like, oh, he could get there this year. And I asked him and he said, I don't really think about it that much. He said, you know, when you're in a place for a long time, those are the kinds of numbers that you're going to get. But after the game, you know, especially after the way that game went, he was like really nicely emotional and thanking sort of the players who sacrificed to make it happen and how a lot of the message over the course of that week had been sacrifice. And it was really nice. Like, I think he absolutely deserves his flowers. He's going to deserve his flowers even more when he gets that record. Cause I'm not sure if anyone's going to surpass that with what he did. And there's, you know, time to get even further more than that. I did ask him at the end. I said, like, oh, you know, to 250 more. And he said, there's not going to be 250 more. But still, just very, very cool. I'm very happy for him, for his coaching staff, and for the stability that he has brought to this program. And, you know, you're looking at a guy who is already on the Mount Rushmore of coaches in UMass history, up there with, you know, with Sam Koch and Cal and, you know, the very best ever. So it's I was very, very happy for him. And it was nice seeing how heartfelt it was, because he could have easily been like, it's just, you know, another win, but yeah, he wasn't. And there are a lot of things that go into it, and hearing how much he enjoys his job was important and nice.
Everybody check out Nathan Strauss's Twitter for that for the excerpt. It was a great one. Just how humble Carvey was about the whole thing. Like, he didn't even make it about himself. He made it about the team. You know what I mean? Like, he's very team forward. You can tell that's part of the culture. That's why guys love to play for him. So yeah, make sure you guys check that out, because that was a really, really good, I guess, interview. I don't know if interview is really the word for that, but
yeah, it's our post-game interview for,
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, one of Carvey's phrases, you get what you deserve. Definitely,
yes, sir.
The case for him right there. So happy for him there. And what do you say we take this into awards?
Let's go.
All right. So the first one we give out, fitting, Carvel's Character and Compete Award, CCC. It's really no question for this game. It's Jack Musa, Hockey East Player of the Week, hat trick on the road. I mean, we've already gone in detail on him. I don't know how much more there is to say, but just very deserving of this award. It's been, I think you were checking, Evan, it's been a little bit since he's gotten a CCC for us. So,
yeah, his last time he got it was against AIC. He ended up getting, I think there was only two goals from him in that game. That was back on, that was November 2nd. But I think it's pretty easy to tell if Musa ends up getting, you know, he ended up getting Hockey's Player of the Week. It seems pretty obvious that he would get the CCC here. You know what I mean? Like, it would make no sense to really pick anybody else here. I mean, if he's good enough for Hockey East, he's definitely good enough for us. You know what I mean? So he definitely deserved it there. I mean, three goals in one game. I think the craziest thing is the fact that I think it was on the Instagram post from Hockey East, tons of salty Maine fans that were really upset that Taylor McCarr didn't end up getting it. And I'm like, if we do the math here, Taylor had three goals across two games. Jack had three and one. If we're looking at a law of averages here, I mean, three goals averaging, you know, per game is much better than one and a half. So I don't know. Again, we keep talking about math here for some godforsaken reason on this episode, but the math does not lie here, I feel like.
I mean, awards are awards, right? Like,
of course,
the hat tricks are permanent. So, you know, Taylor had a nice game winning goal in overtime, though, for Maine against Providence. I'm happy that he's having success. So.
Oh, 100%.
But sure, also happy for Jack to get that weekly award.
Fully deserved.
Taylor had a high character award named after him, so that should be a good honor right there in place of that player of the week.
That is true.
All right, so next is Good Try UMass Award, the player that we think can do a little bit better out there. Kind of tough when you have a 4-5-4 comeback win in a ranked road game. Kind of hard to find a player for a good try. So it's not going to be going to a player. This is going to the two guys I'm talking to right now, Evan and Nathan. You guys both, you guys really downplayed UConn going into this year. I think both in the same high character episode, the schedule preview, they're certainly outkicking their coverage this year, I guess, with the expectations that were put on them by the big J's such as yourself.
I don't know if I qualify as a big J, but yeah, I mean, UConn last year were really bad. And I looked at who they lost. They lost Matthew Wood. They lost Salmonen. They lost all three goalies from last year. I thought, wow, there's no way this team is going to be, you know, even close to the upper half of Hockey East. And credit Mike Cavanaugh on the work that he's done, and their freshmen and their transfers who they brought in. They are much more of a team than they were last year. They've got a lot of really experienced guys. They've made me eat my words. And it is, you know, looking more than likely that they will end up making the NCAA tournament for the first time ever in UConn hockey history. So congratulations to them. Nice try, Nathan Strauss. Shows what I know.
Yeah, honestly, I'll take my lumps for this one. Like, I don't remember the exact wording that I used, but I remember when we did our, like, overall kind of season preview and we talked about expectations for other Hockey East teams, I said something along the lines of they're going to be hot ass or hot garbage or something to that effect. I do remember I used some distinct language. And
you
said
something because you knew Nathan couldn't say something.
Exactly. Like that, yeah, because I remember that Nathan afterwards kind of took my phrasing and explained it infinitely more eloquently than I ever could, or at least that I chose, you know, to at that point. So, you know, I think, you know, obviously me and Nathan were on the same page there. I think our wording was a bit different and we're both eating our words right now. You know what I mean? Like it's fair. I mean, I don't have any ill will towards UConn. Like I know I have in my mind, definitely some enemies in Hockey East, you know, teams that I don't particularly care for. I have no issue with UConn. I mean, you know, UMass and UConn have tried to make a rivalry happen specifically for football there. We could make a whole episode on how that went, but you know, there's specific branding behind it, you know, with certain acronyms and things of that nature. You know, we have that, you know, type of thing going, you know, on the ice right now. And we're hoping that we can kind of make that a permanent thing. But I don't really know if we really have that full rivalry kind of distinguished yet. But every time that we play them, it tends to be a pretty good game of hockey, which I think is really cool. Like maybe not in the same way as Merrimack, where it's always super close, but at least the games against UConn tend to be entertaining, where there's going to be a lot of goals, at least for one team. You know what I mean? So there's always something you can hang your hat on there. But yeah, they've definitely been outperforming themselves. And you know what? Fair play to them. No ill will on my part towards them at all.
Yeah, I was a little more high stakes. I waited till right before this game to go on the pod and call UConn fraudulent, which luckily didn't come back to bite me.
There you go.
Also, I guaranteed you guys a one goal game, and that's what we got on Friday. So feel pretty good about that one.
It took to the last minute of the game for it to happen. You were sweating. I remember that because when they ended up making it 5-4, you were in two minds. You were like, "Oh crap, they might potentially tie this per chance," but then also you were thinking like, well, there's the one goal game that I promised. So you kind of look like a hyper genius at the very end of that. I'll give you your props for that one, Cam. Good work.
Appreciate it. Let's go over to our custom awards. Nathan, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I've got the away cooking award going to Michael Hrabal, because somehow the shots on goal total for this game had UConn with 46 shots on goal, including 23 in the second period. And all I can think is that somehow they must have counted a bunch of like really in close rebound tries and given like five in a row to Caden Shahan and maybe like three to Tattle, because UMass being outshot 23-12 in that second period, this doesn't match the eye test for me at all. But at the same time, it becomes, I want to say, the third highest single game save total for Michael Hrabal in his career. And yes, he gives up four, but that's the kind of game that'll really boost your numbers. So he gets the away cooking award for the number of shots that he faced, and also comes away with a win. I thought he played in general pretty well.
I love that, because I mean, it's always an interesting thing when you give up four goals and you still have above a 900 save percentage from the game. Like I think that's really interesting for sure. Cause you said what, 46 shots he faced. So yeah, exactly. Well, so I do have the box score pulled up. So in the second period alone, Ryan Tattle got himself five shots according to the box score. Jake Richard had five and Caden Shahan had four. So that right there, it comes up with 14 shots across three players in a period. I don't know how the hell it happened. You're probably right. They probably were all in tight and jamming away at the crease, because they were definitely trying to get to the front of the net, I feel like, in a lot of, you know, opportunities. So, you know, maybe that's how it works. But yeah, super, super weird. I do remember you saying that you wanted to surprise us with your custom award. And that one is definitely surprising. That definitely was not what I expected you to pick there. So really, really astute observation there. Love that.
Yeah, and that's not obviously to take anything away from Hrabal. He played fantastic in this game. The few goals that UConn had were unbelievable shots, perfectly placed. So good job there for Michael Hrabal. Evan, you'll go next. You kind of already gave away your award a little bit, but
yeah, I definitely alluded to it a little bit. So I'm calling this the Super Mario Award, and I'm giving it to Owen Murray. So this one, again, is another video game deep cut. But if you guys have ever played one of those, like, Nintendo, like, sports games, whether it's, like, you know, Super Mario Sluggers, like, you know, tennis, anything like that, there's always, like, whenever you pick Mario in the game, he's never going to excel at one particular thing. Like, his attributes are always spread right down the middle for, like, every major category in the game. That's what I think Owen Murray does. So I'm giving this to Owen Murray, giving him the Super Mario Award, because there wasn't really anything in particular, and it's not just for this game. I feel like it's across the whole season, but there really hasn't been anything that stuck out to me that he's like particularly excelled at in his game. He is just really, really damn good at just basically everything about being a two-way defenseman. And I said that earlier, like his skating, very good. His offensive instincts, like finding that pass, you know, being able to kind of play pucks out of danger and just make the nice safe play. He's been doing that. Getting shots on net, been really good. Defensively, he's a willing shot blocker for a guy that's what, 5'10", 5'11"? He's not the biggest defenseman of all time, but again, he kind of just plays with this like bravery to his game. Like if we had East Side Hockey Manager pulled up, like he would have a 20 stat for bravery. Like that's just what he does. He's just no nonsense, no frills, very, very solid hockey player. And I just have absolutely loved his game. I think, you know, the biggest thing about him to me is how he's been able to jump from that kind of third line role last year all the way to playing basically top line minutes night in, night out against, you know, a gauntlet of Hockey East opponents that are basically giving them their number one line against him every night. He's been doing damn well. You know what I mean? Like he's held his own and then some. So very happy for Owen Murray. You know, super nice dude. I've talked to him after games and before games and stuff. Just awesome guy. Great player. High character individual. I don't know if I'm allowed to make that call, but I think Garvey would say the same thing.
Yeah, I think he definitely would too. When you brought up block shots, he leads the team 31 block shots on the season. So Mercury is right there with 30. He's who I probably would say eye test wise leads that shot, that category, but all around great stuff. And he's shouldering a big, much bigger load this year too, Murray is. So love to see that out of him for sure. All right. And then I guess we'll go over to my award. I'm calling it the Skill Point Dump Award. And when we brought up Chell already, when you have a be a crow, I think that's what it's called these days. You get skill points to put in different categories and stuff like that. This one's going to Kenny Connors, and I feel like he's been saving up for a while, and he just dumped some skill points into the shot accuracy category. Because last five games he has goals in all five. I think it's six goals in five games right now. And just watching the types of goals he's getting, obviously barring those empty netters, he's really placing the puck well. A couple posts and in, just picking corners. And it's not a level of his game that we've seen for quite a while, but of late, just every game now, he's been having some fantastic looking shots.
And I think the biggest thing is that, like, we've known he's had that in his game for a while. Like, you look back, I think, what was it? Was it last season where he got the Northeastern overtime winner? That was, like, bar down. I think it was 3-on-3 overtime. Like, filthy, right? Like, he has that ability, and he always has had that ability. You know, he can score greasy goals in front of the net from just, like, you know, like, the low slot and just kind of chip pucks in deep and, you know, stuff like that. But he just finds a way to pick corners now. Like, I think it was Silas, another great listener of the pod. He ended up, I think, commenting on one of our things. I think it might have been last week when Kenny ended up scoring a goal. He literally said, "Call him Kenny Corners." Like, I kind of want that to stick now. Like, I feel like that's kind of a sick name now for him. Maybe that'll be a nickname that ends up, you know, sticking around. So, I mean, his shooting has just been absolutely amazing. The other parts of his game have been great too. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong. It's really like, he definitely has been dumping everything into that shooting accuracy because that's what's been, you know, showing in the past couple weeks. But the other parts of his game have been really apparent throughout the entire season. But definitely his shooting has been nothing short of spectacular for these past couple weeks for sure.
Yeah, so good job to all our award winners. Do you guys have anything left from this game? I know we went pretty in-depth on for one game, but before we move on to some previews and bigger scale items,
I think we're ready to move on to the big beast known as BC at this point.
All right, yeah. So it's finally that time of year. It's the home and home with BC. BC, unanimous number one team in the country right now. Obviously, UMass fans have a lot of reasons to be scared of this matchup, and with good reason. BC's at the time we're recording this, they're playing BU right now in the Beanpot Championship. They're 21-4-1 right now. All of their losses are to solid programs. Michigan State, they were a number one team in the country for a while. Takes a while to scroll down and find these. UConn in stores is kind of the big outlier there. They lost
Merrimack at home
in that game. Northeastern on the road 4-2, and then a home loss to Merrimack 5-2. Yeah. But other than that, Good quality wins. They're on a big win streak right now. This team is firing, and especially defensively of late too. They have two shutouts in their last three games. So every category you can conceive, there's something to be worried about there for this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, they also have what should be a unanimous Hobie Baker Award winner this year in Ryan Leonard. And I know he's not leading the country in points, but he is leading the country in goals, and he is far and away the best player in college hockey. And I say that, you know, I want Cole O'Hara to get as many looks as possible, but Ryan Leonard is playing NHL-level hockey. And as soon as BC's season ends, he will be on a plane to join Ovechkin and help the Caps push for a Stanley Cup this year. He's just that good. And, you know, you look at what he does to teams, and he just takes over games. And he also torched UMass last year. I think he had 6 points against us in three games, including a couple power play goals in that time. So he's a great player. Obviously, Fowler is probably going to win another Hockey East Goalie of the Year award this year with how good he's been, although BC's structure helps with that. They've added some good experience transfers. Their defenseman depth is good. They obviously have James Hagans, who's a top five pick in the upcoming draft. They've got Dean Letourneau, who is the Bruins' first rounder, and he's been kind of like in and out of the lineup and playing bottom six for them, and he's been really good. And then you have the traditional, you know, Andre Gasso, Oscar Jelvik, Lucas Gustafsson, who had a good weekend last week. And then we haven't even talked about Gabe Perreault, who is amongst the nation's leader in points. And yeah, I mean, like, this team's a really good team. Like, there's no doubt about it. But I don't think it should be dismaying for UMass, because remember last year, UMass should have gotten points from the road game against BC. Now, look, there's 8 minutes of that game that you don't know what would have happened. But there were like three like incredibly egregious mistakes in that game that cost UMass. And we're not going to relitigate that because we've already praised the officiating. And we know that there was an apology issued after that game. And then the New Hampshire series, which was next. But like, UMass played well enough in that game after getting, you know, trounced at home the previous night to get points. And so I think a successful weekend here is if you get one or more points. Losing this game losing these two games basically doesn't hurt you in the pairwise, but getting a result does. And the fact that teams like UConn, Northeastern, and Merrimack, all of whom UMass has beaten this year, have gotten wins over them, gives, you know, reason for optimism as well. You have to play your A game. You can't take penalties. And also BC has an outstanding penalty kill. They were the best in the country to start the season. They're now just second at 90.5%. So again, like, you got to stay mistake free. You've really got to manage your matchups, and it's going to be tough, but this is the hardest test that UMass has left, and any kind of positive result would be big. But again, if you lose these two games, it's by no means a cause for concern, because BC has been doing this to everyone this year. And I think there's a possibility if they beat BU tonight, maybe they have some championship hangover on Friday. But either way, like, you got to play these two games somehow. You're going to have to play them again maybe in the tournament. Just got to get it over with.
Yeah. Well, Cam, go ahead.
I was just going to say, a lot of the numbers don't jump off the page like I thought they would going into this. Their goals per game are down from last year. They're at 3.5 right now. Their power play is not nearly as successful as it was last year. It's 17%. They lose faceoffs at a pretty decent clip. Their faceoff win percentage is 47.1%. So nothing like crazy like it was last year, but you're right about the defensive stats. Like, 1.7 goals allowed per game is kind of nutty. The 0.095 conversion percentage for their opponent's power play is kind of nutty too. So kind of a different look, high quality BC team this year compared to past seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, I'm willing to go on record right now. Like, if we manage to even tie one of these games, you will see me sprinting probably towards the student center or something like that. And I'll probably start doing snow angels like outside of it. Like, I don't know. I'll do something there. I don't know exactly what I could end up doing, but I will be running out of Mullins, clicking my heels, smiling the entire time. Like, if we can just get a couple of points out of the series, I see it as a win. You know what I mean? Like, overall expectations right now, I know we're on a heater right now. Like, we're looking really solid. We're playing some of our best hockey. But again, BC's kind of a buzzsaw right now. And I don't want to be a buzzkill when I say that. But, like, that's just what they are right now. And, you know, I'm really hoping that they do have that championship hangover. I mean, I don't want them to win the beanpot, because That was something that I think Ryan Leonard really wanted to do, and I think it'd be hilarious if that didn't come to fruition. But regardless of that point, I really hope that we can definitely put our best foot forward this weekend and get a result.
Yeah, I think there's a couple keys to this series that I'm looking for. We can't have a start to either game like we did against UConn. Nope. It'll easily be 4-0 if we have that kind of start against BC. So it just can't happen. And I don't know what they're going to have to do, but you have to do something to try to contain Ryan Leonard. Yep. Like, I think offhandedly, Nathan, you mentioned he's like close to being the active scoring leader against UMass of all the players in the country. And he's played 3 games against us. Like, he's the guy that you have to cover and watch the most in this series. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I will say UMass has historically had a hard time winning at both Conte Forum and at Aganis Arena, and we beat BU 4-0 earlier this year. So maybe there's a chance for more demons to be exorcised on Friday night on Valentine's Day. All I'm saying is, as someone who does not have a Valentine, and I am taking applications for those who are interested, as someone who does not have a Valentine, Cam's like, oh, I got a fiance, so fuck you guys.
I'll be there, though. Don't worry, I'll be there.
As someone who does not have a Valentine and is very much married to the game, this would be a huge, huge way to make me feel happier on Friday. And yes, my number is 617-610-3070 if you are an eligible bachelorette and have interest in dating someone who doesn't shut the fuck up. So, yeah.
I don't want to steal Nathan's thunder, but again, 617-529-8602. Throw me some texts as well. We'll set up the double date Friday, Conte Forum, and we'll get, I don't even know what restaurants they have in the area, but I'll make sure I take some time off work.
Pino's Pizza or El Pilon Taqueria. Both are absolute bangers.
All right, so we're going to have to hit that up with our 2 dates. We'll have a nice little double date, and then we'll make sure that we watch a nice, comfortable 4-1 UMass victory at Conte, and it's going to be a wonderful night. So I think, I mean, we'll see how it goes. That's the hope, but I don't know if we can make any sort of guarantees right now, but I think that'd be freaking awesome if that could come to fruition.
I will not be doxing myself, but
fair enough.
I will be there. Don't worry. Me and my fiance will be coming. It took some convincing to be able to get to Conte on Valentine's Day, but rest assured, High Character will be in the house. Tickets were pretty pricey for this game. Yeah, I hope it's worth it, but it'll be a fun time. And you got to be there for the chance that those, like Nathan said, like those demons get exercised. So yeah, I guess there's not much more for us to say. If you guys want to relive last year, go check out our reels. If you want to get mad for a little bit, go see some of the calls and stuff from that. Hopefully we have nothing like that in this series, and hopefully UMass gets the job done. I fully agree that any amount of Hockey East points is a successful weekend in this game.
All I asked is that we go viral for the right reasons this weekend. Cause yeah. I know, like, what did we get? Like 300K, 400K views on one of those. I think it was the BC one, probably had like 10K likes. I think if we can pull those types of numbers, and that's going to be off of, like, you know, who would get a hat trick, and that would be kind of sick, and that would go viral. A nice little Kenny Connors Hattie, I think, to what would that bring him up to, like 9 or 10 goals in his past 7 games or something crazy. Like, I think that's what's gonna need to happen. So, Cam, we might have to edit that up. We'll have to get we'll make sure that we have this voiceover on the video, so then we can make sure that we go viral as well as Kenny going viral for that. That would be absolutely sick.
Love it. So let's finish this out with just a little like look forward, and we can talk about standings and pairwise and stuff like that. The win against UConn and some of the other results from this past weekend got UMass up to 15th in the pairwise. We've been talking about it for a while on this podcast. 13th is probably the safe spot for being able to make the tournament this year. And even though that is very high in terms of pairwise standings, that's probably what it's going to have to be with some of the lower conferences right now. But I know, Nathan, you only have a couple minutes left, so maybe you can give like a scenario that you think is most likely for UMass making the tournament, or kind of what we need to like root for the most in these last couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're rooting for UMass the rest of the way. Yes. I don't know if that's a hot take or not. But no, I will answer your question in good faith. I think you're rooting for UMass. I think you're rooting against UMass Lowell, weirdly enough. Like, I think you're rooting against UNH as well. And obviously, UMass has four games against those two schools combined, two against each of them. Because I think you really want UMass to leapfrog both of them. And you have leapfrogged New Hampshire. They're down at 18th right now. UMass is at 14th. Harvard beating Northeastern dropped UMass 0.006 percentage points for whatever reason. Well, I mean, I know why, because Northeastern has played a lot of Hockey East teams and we have not. And then you're starting to root against like the Penn States of the world and Minnesota States of the world and Quinnipiacs of the world as well. Like, if you want the cut line to be 13, then you're saying, okay, like, we're rooting against the CCHA. Sorry, Minnesota State. I do love those jerseys. You're rooting against the ECAC, so that way it's just, you know, a one-bid league. And certainly the Atlantic, although there isn't really a team that could really qualify out of the Atlantic. Their highest is Sacred Heart right now at 28th. Yeah, and then you're also rooting for Omaha, who has carried a lot of weight for us over the course of this year. You're rooting against Michigan as well. Like, as much as you want to root for the good of the conference and you want all these Hockey East schools to get in, you know, the higher up you can get at the expense of the likes of UMass Lowell, you're also rooting against Arizona State, which I think is natural for many people, the better. But yeah, I mean, really, like, if you can take the plurality of points against UNH, the plurality of points against UMass Lowell, just like last year, all of a sudden you get two games with Maine at home, who in all likelihood will know their seeding at that point, and who have been, I don't want to say beatable, but have certainly looked more vulnerable in the last couple of weeks than they did at the start of this year. So then you split with Maine at home, you win your first round Hockey East playoff game at home, and you go on the road, and then I have a hard time believing that UMass is going to end up in like 10th, just because I think that would require a lot to go right. But you're in with a puncher's chance of being right on the bubble, and in all likelihood, it might come down to, again, what the non-conference, what other leagues do to determine where the cut line is. So all I can say is root for UMass, and then maybe root against those other bubble teams. So the Minnesota States, the Quinnipiacs, and the Arizona States of the world as well. So that's where I would lie.
Yeah, very similar to last year. We're UMass fans and Chalk fans for the last few weeks, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and also like UMass getting games to overtime fans, because UMass has not had overtime games this year. Remember last year we played all these one-goal games?
Yep.
This year it's been feast or famine. The last OT game was that I'm pretty sure the UVM game up in, where was it?
November. Yeah.
So like, again, since then it's been fairly, you know, it's been all regulation. If you're going to lose on the road, do it in OT. If you're going to lose at home, do it in OT. It was a huge help to the pairwise last year, but obviously we're rooting for some wins too.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Awesome. We'll let you bounce. We know you got a time crunch here, so appreciate you coming on. Maybe we'll have you on like playoff time, like we did last year, something like that.
Yeah, 100%. As always, go UMass. And hopefully I can get both of you into my next call when you guys throw your hats.
Hell yeah. I appreciate that, Nathan. Take care. Nathan.
All right, so I guess we don't have too much more to say, but we'll finish out this episode. In terms of Hockey East standings, UMass is eighth place right now. I think, yeah, that's the first spot that gets a home game in the first round of the Hockey East playoffs. Yeah. The season ended today. We'd get a home game against Vermont, which, like, this year might not be a great matchup.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
But certainly a lot of room to climb. UMass has the least amount of games tied for the least amount of games played in all of Hockey East right now. They're at 16. A lot of the other teams are 17 and 18 games played. UConn has 19 right now, and they're in fourth place. But certainly some room to move. UMass has 21 points. Providence, with a game, an extra game ahead of them, is 3 points ahead, 24. Merrimack's one ahead of them, 25. Lowell is one ahead of them, 26. And UConn, with their couple extra games, are at 28. So it's pretty stacked up in the middle of Hockey East. We're going to need some things to go right, like Nathan said, but like there's some room to at least give yourself a little bit of comfort knowing you get a good matchup, a home game. Maybe they could slip into a spot that they get a bye. So there's certainly a lot to play for in Hockey East, if there wasn't already with the national pairwise implication.
Yeah, I see two things that are abundantly apparent just based off of what Nathan just said and then what you just said. So touching upon the whole national pairwise picture, I think it's crazy that we are once again going to have a massive stake in the game based on what Omaha does. Why is it always Omaha, bro? Like, I feel like I should be buying a freaking jersey from them at this point. Like, I'm going to be watching their box scores and their games probably with the same amount of passion as I would for a UMass game.
You were last year.
Yeah. It's insane to me how it's going to be most likely 2 years in a row that it's going to hinge on them. But here we are. It is what it is. And then, I mean, dude, in terms of the Hockey East standings, let's just sweep BC and then we don't have to worry about anything. I mean, it's a pretty cut and dry scenario. Let's be honest here.
I got to take a minute to find it, but let me see.
You want to do like the pairwise?
Where we would be pairwise if we sweep BC this weekend.
Yeah, because I mean, like realistically, and this is blatantly just me trying to buy you some time here, but like realistically, right, when it comes to BC, like, I mean, again, you look back at last season, we had a friggin' chance, right? Like, again, I don't want to rehash the reasons why, but we all know, like, it's like the classic, like, if you know, you know type of scenario. And, I mean, BC is a beatable team. I know that might not look like it this season. You know, what were they, like, 23-4 or whatever you said? Like
23-4-1.
That's a nutty win percentage. But, yep. Like, again, we've had decent looks against them. Obviously, our most recent game against them was nothing short of horrendous in the Hockey East playoffs. That sucked. That was what, 8-1, 8-2? Like, that was a tough look, let's be honest here. But like again, in those other games, you know, at Conti and then at home, like they were relatively close. Like we could have definitely taken points from them. It's potentially doable again. Cam, do you have it pulled up now?
I do. So getting swept, we stay at 15th. We wouldn't move at all.
All right.
If we're able to win the home game, lose the road game, we're up to 13th. Which is kind of this somewhat safe spot. If we win both, we're at 11th. So there's some huge opportunities here this weekend that you don't normally get. Obviously, the task is very large, a David and Goliath situation here, but we can dream, right?
Is there anything that happens if we were to just, you know, I guess basically in Nathan's dream scenario, like get one or two points? Like if we take one of them to overtime, if we get a tie, like, I don't know how specific you can
give me
get.
Give me a very specific scenario. I'll throw it in.
So let's say, like, you know, like we lose the game at Conti, but then we tie, like, and then, like, we win the shootout at home, let's just say, or something like that. Like, or even, like, just, like, an overtime loss or something like that. I'm just wondering, is there a scenario where we move up to 14th?
Yeah, so that exact scenario, a road loss and then a tie gets us to 14th.
Okay, so I mean, realistically, it's almost like there's a direct correlation between how many Hockey East points you get and how many moves you make in terms of the pairwise. So,
yeah.
I mean, let's hope that we get all 6 points and then we move up, what, 5 pairwise? I think that's the only way that it doesn't directly correlate. So, I mean, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, again,
just winning the road game and then losing at home brings us to 13th, too. So, pretty clear. We get swept, it's 15th. A split is 13th, a sweep by UMass is 11th, and then just getting one or two points there will be 14th. So we know the stakes. They're high, as Garrett Cole once said. Funny clip, kind of random.
Hell yeah.
I'm nervous. I'm not going to lie. I'm not gonna talk like I did about UConn last week.
I mean, Cam, I'm going to be honest with you. Why are you nervous? We've just literally spelled out the fact that if we get swept this weekend, it has genuinely zero bearing on us moving backwards in any stretch. Like,
because I know what it feels like when Jake McLaughlin scores a goal with 3 seconds left. I know what's
no, and I get that. But that's the thing, is that like I feel like that should take away the nervousness. Like maybe excitement is.
You sound like me right now. This is what I'm supposed to be telling you.
I know. Well, no. But like, this is what I'm saying though, is that like, I feel like in this very specific scenario, we can only go up. There is literally zero negative to this. Like, I feel like
you.
I know. I know. I'm the insane one here. Maybe I'm the rational person. I think the word you're looking for is excitement. I don't think it's nervousness.
Yeah.
I think it's excitement at what we could potentially do this weekend. But like, I don't know. Maybe I'm the psychopath at this point. But like, if we just swept, it is what it is, brother. Like,
I got a little more at stake. Maybe I'm thinking maybe I'm in the doghouse if we get beat 8-0 on Friday on Valentine's Day. I don't know.
I could not, and you know, I know that Soph's gonna listen back to this and she's probably gonna text me angrily in a couple days time, but like, if she's gonna be really mad about that, that's a skill issue on her part, you know. Like, I'll be honest, if she didn't understand already what the most likely scenario is gonna be out of this weekend, just statistically, right, we probably have about a 10% chance of winning, right? Like that, and that's probably, I'm just talking pure statistics. Like, if you were to run a million simulations of this game, we probably win 10 to 15% of them. Mm-hmm. If, you know, I get it's Valentine's Day. I know you guys already had that conversation way ahead of time. This was a process to get out to Conti. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to be happy if you guys, if this pays off and we're smiling as we leave that place, that's going to make it all worth it. But
we're making a scene if we win on Friday. I know.
Dude, you have no, I'm probably going to end up getting beat up. Like, I will be screaming. Like,
legitimately.
Yeah, no, like, I'm going to make sure that I wear a white jersey to the game so I can have blood stains on it as a mark, like a trophy, you know what I mean? Like battle scars for when I bring that thing home. That's just the reality of the situation. Like, I think, you know, there's a lot, but there's a lot of pride, I guess, potentially. Like, there's a huge upside with not very little downside. You know what I mean? Like, I've kind of emotionally disconnected myself from a loss, but I have emotionally times 10 charged myself for a win, if that makes any sense. Like, it is, you know, like, I rehashed this a bunch of times.
An interesting note, too, if we beat BC, that'll give us wins against all four Boston Beanpot schools this year.
That'd be kind of sick, actually. I like that. I like the sound of that a lot.
Yeah, so that's another little added bonus right around Beanpot time. So we'll see you at both games. We'll be there. If you see us, say hi. It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be exciting, stressful, all the words, and we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a slow week leading up to this, but once we're there, it's going to be fun. So I think that's all we got. That's about it. That's all you got?
Yes, sir. I'm ready to do the sign-off.
All right. Appreciate you guys for listening. Go UMass. Go beat BC.
Go UMass. Take care, everybody. Holy crap, Cam added a thing to the end of his sign-off. And we're going to share all those wonderful emotions with you at both games this weekend. Let's go.